Hello, everyone, and welcome to Griplock Foundation Disc Golf Weekly Podcast. I'm Hunter, joined as always by Trevor and Connor, and we've got one heck of a show today. We're not even going to try to keep it short, to be honest with you. I was about to say that. We're just going to let it flow. It's not going to happen. I've got 6 pages of notes, according to my phone, or according to my laptop in front of me, but we're going to go over the President's Cup, the European Open, what the heck happened to Nico, power rankings update, Trevor's trivia, and Owen Scoggins flipped someone off? Yeah. Maybe, allegedly. You'll hear about it later. But first, a word from our sponsors. Hey, you. Yeah, you. Got bush? You definitely do if you haven't tried the best products from our sponsor today, Manscaped. Taking control of your bush is important, and these products are so good, you're going to be showing pride in your new bush-free yard. Save big and be the most hygienic version of yourself by using our discount code GRIPLOCKED for 20% off and free shipping over at manscaped.com. The grooming package I highly recommend is the Performance Package 4.0. Inside of that package, you'll find the Lawnmower 4.0. This electric trimmer is a bush's worst nightmare. This trimmer is designed to reduce grooming accidents, shave hair on loose skin, thanks to ceramic blades and advanced skin-safe technology, and there's no need for night vision goggles because this trimmer has an LED light to allow you to mow the lawn in the dark. That's 20% off and free shipping over at manscaped.com using our code GRIPLOCKED, one word, GRIPLOCKED. It's time to, I haven't read this part, not going to read it. Your balls will thank you. Head over to manscaped.com and check out their full array of products and use code GRIPLOCKED, get 20% off and free shipping. All right, man, the European Open, second major for the MPO Players of the Year, third major for the FPO Players of the Year. What a tournament. But first, before the European Open even starts, one of my favorite things about the European Open is that it gives us the President's Cup. And the President's Cup, if you didn't watch this year, Team USA remained undefeated, improving to 10-0, and honestly a dominant fashion. I don't really think it's going to be a little bit. I think give Europe a few more years and then we might have a story there, but
we keep saying that though.
That's true. I mean, Team USA, Paul put it a good way in like a post-round interview. He's like, we have like a 50-year head start.
Yeah.
Basically, the U.S. over Europe on disc golf as a whole.
I will say, like, you can just kind of tell from, and we'll talk about this more, but, like, the scope of the European Open and just how massive it is over there, that, like, Europe is going to catch up really quickly,
yeah,
talent-wise.
They should.
But, I mean, yeah, when you look at the top players in the world, they're all Americans, so it's not, you know, it's not a shock that they dominate. Now, that being said, you know, they're in Europe at courses they're not as familiar with. Some players, you know, it's even more new to them. Obviously, guys like Paul have seen his course a bunch. But, you know, it was still a dominant match, and it wasn't really close at all. So I think there's definitely a ways to go, for sure.
Now, if you're unaware of what the President's Cup is, it basically was round of stroke play, round of match play, Team USA versus Team Europe. And stroke play always gives you a little bit of a glimpse into the weekend, yeah, because they play the exact course they're going to play. They play a few of the more feature holes, 9 of the more feature holes, and they play the same in match play.
That's an interesting, that's actually interesting that if you are good enough to make the President's Cup team, you now get to practice under some pressure at the actual course. Honestly, probably not the greatest idea. Like, maybe they should move that to a different course, because, like, it is, I mean, they earned the spot.
I mean, it's the same as, like, if the Pro Tour started doing, like, pro-ams or something like that.
Yeah, that is true. But it's this is under pressure practice, which is, like, that is very valuable.
But, I mean,
valuable.
If you took the GK Pro Skins match serious enough, that's under pressure. Like, you can find ways to add pressure.
It's also true.
Like, if you do,
down,
I mean, so many
GK
people
skins.
So many people do, like, videos, too, of, like, challenges the week, like, leading up to.
Yeah.
If you take those serious, like, we feel pressure in our bogey bro battles.
They are very,
and so if
pressure
you're
filled.
Brody and Ezra, they're getting pressure-filled practice.
Well, I mean, it's a little different than that.
But you know what I mean.
But,
though.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying. All I'm saying is it was a good advantage.
I love it. I love the President's Cup. And Paul popped off, went 7-under through 9. And that was the moment.
Yeah.
I put him in my predictions, but I hadn't predicted him to win. And that moment I said, that's a mistake, Hunter.
Yeah.
Because I saw him 7-9. I think he might have been 7-7 at one point. But I did have James Conrad, and James Conrad was also playing very well. So I was like,
yeah,
that's my solace. Eagle, though, went 2-under through 9 and tied his match with Nicklaus in the match play side after that, and contributed to me, like, I'm going to be completely honest with you. Eagle was not even on my radar at all.
Yeah.
I was thinking two things. I was thinking, one, I think he's coming back too early. I think this is dumb for him to come back. And two, I was like, I bet the only reason is because it's such a big promotion event for Discmania. I bet he's going to go out there and he's just going to be like throwing soft shots and just out there to show face. Essentially,
he was on where
my head was.
He was on my radar. Like I had this inkling feeling when I was doing my predictions that like Eagle leaving him out, like that could be a mistake. But I was confident that he was not going to come top three. Like I was pretty confident that it was like, okay, there's no way he comes straight back and is like right back on his game. And I was like, this course, you know, having a forehand is so valuable.
Yeah.
I mean, and we're going to like just the amount of forehands that like Paul had to throw. And then like, he just didn't throw any. I mean, what the heck?
Eagle was definitely not on my radar. I did not expect it at all.
That's not what you said in the podcast.
Is that not what I said in the podcast?
No.
What'd I say?
You said, for some reason, I feel like Eagle might, but I'm not going to put him in my top three.
Well, yeah, okay, yes. But for that reason...
Sounds like he's on your radar.
Yeah, sound like
that
he's
sounds
on
like
radar.
A little...
Just kidding. He was on my radar. I called this.
Okay, well, let's just get into the results now. So FPO, Paige Pierce took it down. Evelina Salonen came in second. Henna Blomroos came in third. And then on the MPO side, we had Eagle McMahon taking it down over Paul McBeth. And then Kevin Jones came in third there. First off...
Yeah, we got to talk about the FPO situation.
We got to talk a lot of things. First off, I don't want to talk about the gallery because I feel like when we get into everything else, we're going to forget to talk about the gallery.
You're right.
The gallery was unbelievable. Like,
it was incredible.
Some of the shots they had of the gallery, I can't wear these headphones. Some of the shots they had of the gallery blew my mind.
Yeah.
Like, I think UC said that early in the week, he said they expected 5,000 people. And then on Sunday, he said he was being interviewed and said, there's already thousands of people out here. I definitely think we'll hit that 5,000 people goal.
Yeah,
so
curious
we never
to see
heard
if,
exactly how many people, but
well, if they,
that's
if they,
a lot.
If they did break 5,000, then they'll probably release the number if they have a number. But yeah, it was incredible. It was like watching that lead card on the final day, especially. I mean, even from the get-go, like first day lead card, it was a nice gallery. But you're watching that final day gallery, and you know they get to certain holes where Eagle's throwing that lefty backhand. I forget exactly what hole.
Hole two,
yeah. And it's just they're just lining both sides of the fairway.
Yeah,
and
Nate Doss at one point said they were 15 deep.
Yeah.
Whether
when they showed the drone shot, it wasn't quite that much, Nate.
But hey, I liked what Nate was saying this weekend. And 15 deep, I was like, hey,
Nate
I'm in.
Doss was low key a poet the whole weekend.
I think this is what happens. This is my take on it. I think this is a course that he knows, like the back of it. It hasn't changed that much. He knows it. What we witnessed this weekend is why I think it's crucial for commentators to be on the grounds. I know they weren't on the grounds this weekend,
right,
but they
but
might as
well
have been
well
because
enough.
Of the knowledge. Because the other time we saw that was when they were on the grounds at the DDO.
Yeah.
That's the type of stuff where like Nate Doss can get out there and he knew about like grass. Like they were asking him about like how the grass is going to be affected by the rain. He was like, well, you'll notice out here they cut the grass different OB and in, so you'll notice big skips in the fairway and out of the fairway, no skips, blah, blah, blah. Very insightful stuff that really added.
Yeah.
That's the type of stuff that, like, if you're just sitting at a booth in Oregon when the tour is at a course you haven't seen in Texas, you're not going to be able to say.
So
I think that's where it's crucial for him to get out there, play the course, walk the course. Because this case, he might as well have because he just knows this course so well.
I will also say that I think Ian had his best event. Ian did not bother me.
I think what it was you gave Ian two people in the booth that he thought knew more than him.
I think the triple booth helped him a lot because
he let Brian and Nate shine a lot more, which helped him be reserved.
Every time he had like he thought he knew something, he double checked with Brian and Nate, and that was super helpful. But yeah, Nate Doss like borderline said some poetic things. Like he was like breaking down the situation in a very story like way that like I have not seen out of commentators, and I was like, good for you, Nate Doss. But the gallery was insane. I think it's probably the standard. Now we were at USDGC last year and the numbers were pretty incredible, but I don't think they were like
this.
Well,
I was telling my wife was watching the coverage with me some and she was like, oh my gosh, it's so much bigger over there. I'm like, well, yeah, percentage wise, the sport's definitely bigger over there. But one thing we have to remember
is like their event.
This is the only time they see the US pros.
Yeah.
Like, so if you're within 6 hour drive here, you're like, yeah, I could, but there might be a pro tour closer.
Right.
So like for me, I'm not going to travel to Idlewild because I know I can go to USDGC and the tour championship.
If you reverse the roles and have one event like that in the US, there would be 10,000.
There's just
people
one
there.
Major.
That's a good point.
Everyone like it's one major central location. It's the only time we get to see the US pros. The crowd here would be insane.
Exactly.
It's just we're spoiled.
Right.
So that's where like Is it incredible what they're able to do? Yeah, but we also have to remember, you're pulling from not just Finland, you're pulling from several countries. Yeah. Because it's so squished together, like,
the passion,
it's like a six-hour drive from one country to another.
You know, the passionate fans are definitely there in Europe. I have no doubt that if, you know, we have more... I like the idea of having more events in Europe, or the idea of just, like, growing the European tour, whichever one you decide to grow.
Yeah.
To get to the point where we can have more broadcasted events over there in Europe, because I know there is a lot of passionate fans, and I think that scene is, like, is important to keep that growing.
Absolutely.
But it is, like, people do, and this doesn't take away from the event at all, because it was obviously, like, the fans were there. It was incredible. But it is, like, one of those things where you do have to remember, like, yes, it is, like, the one big event they have all year. If we did something like that in the U.S., it would be even crazier.
Well, I think it makes it the most sellable event in disc golf.
I was thinking the same thing. I was, like... And, I mean, you saw a lot of the players in the President's Cup
they were sponsored
Ford
by
on
Clask.
Their back.
I don't know if y'all saw Clask.
What's Clask?
It's, like, that fun little, like, game that you have, like... It's like soccer.
Oh,
it's like magnetic, and your hands underneath it.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
They were one of the sponsors of the event.
That's crazy.
It's a Finnish game.
They
my brother had bought it years ago, and I just like wave of nostalgia hit me. I was like, what the frick? Why are they sponsoring
so
disc golf?
I mean, we've talked about how like smaller niche sports and games are way bigger in Europe.
When I saw all of those spectators, that's all I was thinking. I was like, this is one of the few events that you could like guarantee sell. There's a lot of on-course activation for sponsors, like, available because there are just so many people there. It's a super sellable event.
The other thing I was thinking of, because obviously spectating in person was big, all the coverage for this was behind a paywall. Right? And there was a lot of complaints about that on social media. Understandably, everything from disc golf is free, right? But a lot of the complaints was it's hurting the growth of the sport. And I took a step back and thought about that for a minute. And I can see where that's true. But on the flip side of that coin, it's probably because the Patty the Batty fight was going on this weekend that gave me this different perspective.
What a fight. I had ESPN Plus. I got it.
Oh, because here's the thing, right? I don't have ESPN Plus. I didn't pay for it. But UFC and stuff like that, what they're able to do is the clips and stuff that they put out surrounding it, that's what piques my interest as someone who's not a fan of the sport.
Yeah.
That's what, like, I saw Patty the Batty was fighting. And if I would have had, if my brother-in-law, Kent, was in town, I was 100% buying that fight.
Sure.
Only reason I didn't was it was going to just be me
right.
sitting at my house by myself at 3 p.m. in the afternoon. I was like,
just wait for the highlights. Yeah.
I'm like, I'll see what happens later.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But if I would have had Kent in town, or if my friend Stout was in town, like, if I would have had, like, one or two other people that are like, dude, you want to watch this fight? I'm in. But the whole reason that got me in, and the other thing with it is once I pay to watch a UFC fight, I'm glued to the screen.
Yeah.
Why? Because a lot of times I just paid $80.
Right.
Like, I'm getting my $80
worth. You're committed once
you buy. So I'm committed to buy it. But what grew UFC, or what reached me with it, was social clips. Because if the Patty the Batty fight was free on YouTube, I might have watched. But it wouldn't have felt as, like, cool to me to watch. I wouldn't have felt a part of it. And if it was free on YouTube, I would have just saw it on Twitter and stuff. I wouldn't have really cared that much.
Yeah.
But the fact that it was behind a paywall and there was the jump, and then there's all this hype going on, it made me feel like I'm missing out on something.
I do get that.
I'm wondering, I don't know how much being behind a paywall really hurts the growth of the sport as much as, like, the media efforts on the other side. Like, the Pro Tour does a great job. Obviously, they're with Disc Golf Network. I feel like they should probably have separate social accounts, but it doesn't matter. The Pro Tour does a great job of, during the event, clips. Boom, boom, boom. And there's some, like, pre-stuff hype. I think the pre-tournament hype is being drastically overlooked.
Yeah.
Because I think that's where you get... If behind...
Get
when
people
it's,
to buy.
Yeah, when it's behind a paywall, that's what grows the sport. Is if you can have a few social clips, like, blow up of...
Right.
What happened last year, like, use the Nico clip next year. If there is a European Open next year, I don't know if they're going to go every other year again. But, like, if you use social clips like that and you have a few blow up and you can, like, pin it as, like, Eagle versus Paul, who's going to take it, and, like, all this stuff to where it feels like I've got to watch that. Then it's like, oh, I only got to pay $10 to watch a whole weekend of it?
Right.
Then I don't know. It was just something I was thinking about.
I agree with this take, and I've said this before, but when you talk about the idea when you say, okay, it's hurting the growth of the sport, you're kind of assuming that you're trying to, by saying that, you're really saying people that don't know about disc golf cannot get to this event. But if they don't know about disc golf, they're not going to find it on the Disc Golf Network.
They might stumble upon it on YouTube.
Right, but I'm saying if somebody doesn't know about disc golf, it's not crucial for them to learn about disc golf by watching the most recent event. All they need to do is search disc golf in the YouTube search bar, and they can find everything they need to know about disc golf, and then that can lead them to find the Disc Golf Network and want to pay. And what you were saying, social clips is another one. They can be scrolling through their Instagram Explore page and see clips of disc golf.
Or TikTok, obviously.
And like those are what leads you to the highest level of consumption, which is buying to watch the best, the newest product. But you don't need that to be like the base level. This is how you get into disc golf. Because it's not. That's not how
you get into disc golf. Well, the flip side of the coin, too, is like there is a solid argument that pay-per-view model and pay subscription model actually furthers the growth of disc golf. Because it puts more money into the hands of the people that have the power to grow disc golf.
Yeah.
To where, like, you have to look at it this way. If the European Open wasn't behind a paywall, how much money would that broadcast have brought in to buy new cameras, to pay commentary crews, stuff like that?
Right.
Versus it being behind the paywall.
And how many new disc golfers would have really watched it?
It's a tough one to look at, but USDGC was a little bit more expensive. This one, there was a package available for $20,
wasn't it?
I think it was $20 if you weren't a Disc Golf Network subscriber. Oh, okay. If you were a Disc Golf Network subscriber, so $10 for the month, or $7 if you're a PGA member, you got access to the whole thing.
Yeah.
So realistically, $7 to $10. But if you were like, screw the Disc Golf Network, I'm gonna pay $20 for some reason, you could have. And the $20 actually got you the bonus content of post-production, the President's Cup coverage.
Yeah, there's a lot of
the
golf.
The GK Pro skins stuff, a lot of other stuff. So
yeah.
I don't know. I just, this was the first time I'd looked at an event and I'd read that this is hurting the growth of disc golf, and I actually thought about it for a second. I was like, I don't think it is.
Yeah, I think people...
What do you think, Connor?
People say that who don't have the subscription and don't want to pay.
Yeah, like, my initial reaction is that it might... Because just making it more difficult to watch for me. I don't want to watch it as much if I have to pay for it. But I think that everything that you said makes sense. That's my initial gut reaction is like, I don't want to watch it as much if I have to pay for it.
But I guess maybe the thing is that it's hurting the growth of, it may be hurting the growth of disc golf on a corporate scale or on a commercial scale, because like Connor already knows about disc golf. But he's not willing to pay to watch, whereas he'd probably watch if it was free. Whereas it's maybe not, people are, when they say in growing sport, it probably doesn't matter for new disc golfers, but maybe it matters for existing ones that aren't giving more money to the sport. So maybe that's where it hurts, but then that's not going to really change anything, because
again, just like you can monetize one viewer for $10, or you have to get 1,000 viewers to monetize out of $10.
I don't know. It's a tricky one.
It's a weird one.
I'm not quite sure where I stand on it.
What would you take foundation out of the equation?
Uh-huh.
Right? You have no reason to watch coverage other than you just want to watch it.
Yeah.
Is there a tournament you're paying $10 to watch? USDGC rolls around. Are you paying $10?
I'm driving to USDGC.
Oh, you can't.
You can't.
You're
drive.
In California. Yeah. Are you paying $10 to watch it?
I think if I got a group together, yeah, I'd do it. Not to watch it by myself.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
If it were me, if I were following disc golf as seriously as I do, or as I have in the past, I would pay $10. I would pay the $10.
I've got to go back to $10 a month.
Absolutely, yeah. But I'm saying if it's like a pay per view per thing.
Oh, it was per event.
Every major, I'm paying to watch, no doubt. I'm paying also to watch most of the pro tour events personally, but I'm addicted to disc golf. Like, I want to watch the coverage more than anything. And
yeah,
but I think that's where it's just,
if I think back to like whenever I was in college, I was like, I watched disc golf like my life depended on it.
Yeah.
And like that was what I did in
my
free time.
And you can split with your roommates in college.
Yeah. If I was like, so if I was still like in the same, because like I still absolutely love disc golf, I just don't have as much time to like consume it. And but I would definitely, I definitely would have paid for it back then.
I think, I don't know. It's
going to be an interesting one to see how it develops, because, I mean, it's pretty obvious the way the sport's going. Like, post-production, I think, will always exist in some form or fashion, but the Pro Tour is going to have the monopoly on it, and does that post-production too, like, exist on the Disc Golf Network? I don't know.
And the live coverage has gotten so good.
This weekend was the best live coverage I've ever watched.
Flawless. Really.
No buffering.
Yeah.
The commentary.
Quality was great. The commentary was good. Great. We saw so much golf.
Oh, my gosh. Mm. So much. Their switching has gotten so solid. They know when to put up graphics. They're finding their stride, like, I used to think they were hopeless at times, but like even the people, like even Ian Anderson, who like I never really liked his commentary, I didn't have one complaint of his this entire weekend.
Incredible.
He was fine. Everybody was great. Like they've even figured out how to deal with tough situations. You know, they throw it to Terry and for some reason it doesn't get through. They get away from it very quickly. Like they figured that stuff out. The live coverage product is so good now that like how can you not like realize that the money is helping that?
Yeah, exactly. My favorite thing was someone was complaining about pay-per-view on Facebook.
Oh my gosh.
And he was like, someone was like, is it there? The question was like, is it worth the money? Should I pay to watch the final round?
Yeah.
And then this dude responded. Yes. He's like, no, it's ridiculous. I paid to watch it. And you see so many different cards. It's impossible to follow what's going on. You're seeing golfers nonstop. It's just like watching ball golf. I hate it. And I was like, you just gave them the biggest compliment.
Yeah.
You can possibly, like, that's a live disc golf product because. Mm-hmm.
It's not hard to follow.
If you look at it, like this tournament, for instance, we'll obviously, we're about to talk through the storylines, but spoiler alert, it was a two-man race, and then it's like 16 strokes to the third, yeah. But the battle for like third and fourth was through a lot of people.
Yeah.
So we got to see, you know, some action from third card, then the whole chase card, which was all Finnish players, which was cool. You got to see their action throughout. So you got to see the battle unfolding in a way that if you were watching just lead card on post-production, two people's throws, Kevin and Chandler Kramer, would have been pointless. The whole thing.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't have realized that Nicklaus jumped up in there or anyone else jumped up in there and was battling with them. So you're just watching. You're like,
yeah.
Okay, skip. All right, Paul's throwing again.
Complaining about them showing more golf is pretty funny.
Because the alternative is what everyone complained about previously, which is like, I'm watching walk down the fairways.
Yeah.
Like, you want to go back to
it's
that?
It's great. It's nonstop throws.
No, it's nonstop throws. Yeah. And every throw they had the name with the score. Every single one. Yeah. And then they constantly were going to leaderboards.
And they were also giving context. They were saying, I was so pleased.
I was very hesitant on live disc golf. Because I, like a lot of disc golfers, wasn't a sports consumer. I was just a disc golf consumer. And so, like, I wasn't used to live coverage of stuff because I just didn't really care to follow sports very much. So it was difficult for me to kind of get into that transition. But I really enjoy watching live coverage now. It feels like you're way more a part of it. And I do like the amount of information they give you.
Also,
like, I'm definitely on team live coverage.
Yeah, well, the story just gets to build.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Because there are moments where someone from Chase Card pushes the lead or whatever, and even if it's for three holes and then he falls off, those three holes feel way more tense.
Yeah.
And it's something that, was it a big enough storyline for them to cover on post-produce? Probably not, because the dude fell off. But is it a big enough storyline during live for those 30 minutes where he's very relevant? Yeah, and it's electric during that.
I
love it.
And there's just nothing that beats like being able to like be on social media, like Twitter, like while it's happening
and be talking about it.
Live disc golf Twitter is more fun than anything else I do on Twitter. Like being able to like quickly whip up a meme or some tweet. Your eagle tweet of the
eagle we see versus the eagle Paul sees, that might have been one of the funniest tweets.
It's pretty good.
Also, Trevor had a Paul meter of like, is Paul back?
Funny.
That was very funny too.
I do enjoy, the weekends where I miss the live coverage, I do really enjoy getting the notifications of your tweets and reading them.
Hey, Trevor's a great follow on Twitter, @FDG_Hunter_T. Be sure to check him out. It's a great follow.
I put some real effort in this weekend to like see how many followers I'd gain, just like if I really tweeted a lot, and I gained like 300 followers.
I gained a solid, including my Nico tweet. My Nico tweet blew up. It got like 700 something likes.
The video I did.
Yeah, your video is popping off. It's almost at 14,000, I think, now.
Yeah. That's pretty scary. I was talking to some buddies the other night about how like I'm probably on his hit list at this point.
Oh, absolutely.
We'll get more into the Nico situation.
We both are. Let's just talk over what actually went down this weekend. So Paige Pierce, FPO, was back 8 strokes after round 2.
And ain't over till it's over.
And was able to chase down Evelina for the win. Evelina actually, I was looking at the stats. She was able to putt 72% C1X this weekend.
Heck yeah.
Pretty solid.
Yeah.
Wasn't enough. Paige was still able to gain 8 strokes on her putting. strokes gained putting. Paige is a little over 11.
Paige had
and
the putter
Evelyn
working.
Was at like 3. Paige Pierce now has the most all-time major wins in FPO at 17 yeah. passing
wow.
Valerie Jenkins. So
Dang,
big
Val
weekend
Jenkins
for her.
Had that many.
Big weekend for Paige.
People forget about Valerie Jenkins.
Yeah, honestly. And yeah, Evelina, if you look at her throwing stats, incredible. She was by far strokes gained, tee to green, had it.
And she even putted well. Takes have we've had takes? I'm sure we have, and Brody has had them as well. Where like we said, if she puts this, she'll always win.
Well, we've never said always win, but we've said it about tournaments. We didn't say it about this one.
We did it.
And previously, every other one would be right.
Okay,
so we're in the clear.
Yeah, we avoided that one.
I mean, she hit 70% of fairways. Paige hit 66%. She was 47% circle two in regulation. Paige is only 39. They're about tied in circle one in regulation. So she was out throwing Paige. It's just Paige putted 82% C1X and 20% C2, and Evelina putted
20% C2 is pretty solid.
Evelina putted 70%. I don't know what I was looking at. 70,
whenever
you're, 2% off.
Whenever you know you're not a good putter in the circle, hearing those stats just hurts your feelings so much. Just knowing that no matter what, how good you throw the disc, if you're not putting in circle one, you aren't good.
Yeah. Well, Evelina, the final round, which is when Paige made her comeback in round three and four. Round three, Evelina putted solid 75%, but 0% circle two, and she was 56% circle two in regulation. So basically, she was giving her a lot of looks in circle two and wasn't hitting any of them. Round four, her putter cooled off 55% C1X, and that's when obviously Paige overtook her and won.
Yeah, you give Paige four rounds at a course like that, tough to beat.
Paige took a little shot at the like event organizers of FPO events in general because she was like, I hope this weekend showed we can handle a course like this. Like, don't give us pitch and putter courses.
Heck, pretty sure it didn't show.
Side note,
because she shot
counter argument. She won the tournament 12 over par.
Yeah,
so.
I would actually strongly disagree, Paige. People like watching birdies.
Yeah, that was the only.
I'm sorry, you can't win at an easier course.
It's exciting to watch, but like that's where it's so tough.
She just knows that if they play super hard courses,
she's
like,
gonna win.
She's gonna win, and they're gonna shoot a million over par. Obviously,
but like the person who came in fourth, Katrina. Allen was 22 over par.
Yeah, it's obviously not good for,
like,
this,
just,
for the women's disc golf sport.
It's a tough one because, like,
and she,
I hate to say that's not entertaining, but like 22 over par across four rounds, it's not entertaining.
I don't
want to
watch.
Like, you want to watch, not to say, like, I would not be able to go out there and do any better than that. I promise you.
No,
that's not what
I'm
saying.
I just want
to
watch birdies.
But I want to watch birdies. I want to watch stuff that, like,
and
in
listen,
disc golf, a bogey, you never sit at home and you feel like, when you feel like someone got a bogey, you're like, ah.
Here's
dang,
the thing.
They bogeyed.
Yeah.
I feel like, oh, heck yeah, I bogeyed that hole.
I'm a big proponent of events where par is tough and the winners are just a few under par. It's very rare. Doesn't even happen in the MPO field. But the problem is the FPO field, if you have a course like that, like let's say this course was a little bit easier and Paige finishes and she wins it like
well,
two
Evelina
over,
was able to shoot four under one of the
right,
rounds.
But the problem is there's not enough paired in the FPO field. So if you have an event like that, after like third place, it'll drop off the face of the planet.
Yeah, if you
so,
have a, if you have where like the winner four round event winners two under,
right? Whereas you take,
probably fifth place is going to be like 15,
you
20
take
over.
U.S. women's. Now one of the courses was a little, but the other one at least, like there's a ton of scoring. There's so many different women in it. Like it's better for the women's.
I think there's
a
line
whole.
In between. I think there's a line in between because U.S. women's was too far on the easy side.
Well, yeah.
There's no real danger. The basket sucked.
But I'm saying
a lot
too
of
far
wrong.
On the easy side made for a better event.
It made for
opinion.
A much better event. I agree with that.
So that's what
I
I'm
think
saying.
There's a line in between where the players are challenged and you still have to watch them do
yeah.
stuff that's like, wow.
I
want
to see the
that.
Best rise to the top always. I do.
Yeah.
I do not think Paige should get robbed because we have to play easier courses for the rest of the field. But I think, yeah, you have to find that balance.
I think what you do is I think it's easier courses like U.S. women's with more OB.
Yeah.
So you're punished.
Yeah.
So like the, you still have to execute.
Right.
The course still plays hard.
Yeah, you're
but
not playing.
Every hole you can birdie.
You're not playing
you
hole
at,
18 and just like chucking it to wherever and making
par. If you
par.
Look at the MPO field, that's what's going on here a lot of times is
yeah.
Paul, Eagle, Ricky, all these guys up top, there is basically no hole they play all season, very few, that they cannot birdie.
Yeah.
There's a lot of holes in FPO that they make them play that they even the best players cannot birdie.
Yeah.
I think that's the key is like every
was
hole.
Was there a single hole that averaged under par for the FPO?
For the FPO?
Surely
well,
not.
I mean, the field was a little weak overall, but I can look. The easiest hole was this is FPO. One, two, three holes average under par.
Okay.
8, 14, and 15. 8, 14, and 5. All par threes, a 236, 361, 328.
Yeah.
Those average under par. But I think that's the key, is like find a balance where every hole can be birdied. That was in the final round. That's after the cut. Sorry. No, before the cut, the easiest hole was almost two strokes over par. I lied. Easiest hole was 0.04 under. Okay. Hardest hole was two strokes
over.
Oh,
okay. I was looking at that. I was like, that cannot be true. That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
It's like, that cannot be true. Okay. No, easiest hole was 0.04 under par.
Okay. I was about to say.
But I think that's the key, is in FPO, they need to still be playing a similar game that the MPO plays.
Yeah.
Yeah, I lying to you this whole time? No,
well, I like it when they make the course similar,
yeah,
but it just plays a little bit easier. Like, just bump up the
distances.
I'm
saying the similar golf in the fact of MPO, top of the field, can birdie every hole they see, but they, a lot of times they can also bogey every one of those holes.
Yeah.
That's what you need. In FPO, you need to figure out, okay, yeah, okay, now this is a much shorter hole. Let's bring the OB. And that's where it's going to end up being tough.
At throw pink, they do it pretty well.
Well, that's where events where FPO is fully separate from MPO, mm-hmm, they're able to do it a lot better.
Yeah.
Because what happens is, what were they going to do at the European Open to make that happen? Because you move them up, then that landing zone that MPO is hitting 450 out, really easy to hit from 200 out.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a very hard line, and that's where it's like, eventually, as the FPO gets bigger and bigger, more and more people in the field, it's going to make FPO a lot better, because then it's like, hey, we can't have them on the same course as MPO. Let's get a course fully for FPO at this event, and then that course can be designed to actually push their games.
Yeah.
Versus let's just throw them on the MPO course and it right, pushes everyone's games, but it doesn't allow anyone to really shine.
Yeah.
It's a tough part.
I mean, and like I said, I don't blame Paige, because like, I mean,
no,
she's going to win.
If you throw Paige on that course, she's going to win almost every time.
Yeah.
I tweeted before, because they obviously played at 2 a.m. And so I was going, yeah, to bed at like 10:30, and I tweeted on Saturday night and I said, headed to bed, fully expect to wake up to hear Paige Pierce is the European Open champ. She was back like 3 or 4 strokes. And I said goodnight. And then I woke up to everyone tagging me, being like, you're right, you're right, you're right. I'm like, well, yeah.
Shocker.
I mean, that was the easiest prediction I ever made.
Shocker, yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty simple. On the MPO side, it was basically like there was two tournaments.
And now Trevor can only putt with Pierces.
Yeah. On the MPO side, it was basically like there was two tournaments going on. Paul and Eagle were in one.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the field was in the other. Kevin Jones was 16 strokes behind Paul in third place. I don't know that that's ever happened.
Well, we'll get the trivia later.
A crazy drop off.
Because like,
we'll get the trivia later. I've already done the research.
There's been two horse races of like Paul and Rick pulling ahead of the field, yeah, and Paul beating the field by 8 strokes and stuff like that. But like, two guys that far ahead, wild.
That's a big drop off.
Wild. And that's what some people were saying. Like,
we can do the trivia right now if you want. It's very topical.
No, I'd rather wait.
Okay.
I want to wait for Trevor's trivia to come up, because we got a lot to cover before we get to Trevor's trivia. But people were saying stuff about like the course being soft and blah blah blah, and I was like, okay, take Paul and Eagle out of the field. The winner's at 25 under par.
Yeah, which is not soft.
Like,
at all.
Now
for
it's
four,
like, oh,
for
man,
a four round event,
that's
really
course.
Good. Yeah,
that's a tough course.
Yeah,
but then you put Paul and Eagle in, and the winner's at 42 under.
They're just shredding.
And you're like, all right, yeah,
because they're not human.
No,
neither of them are playing like humans the whole event. It's ridiculous.
And if Eagle had decided not to come back, taking his time off for his arm to heal, it'd have been an absolute bloodbath.
Dude, imagine the runaway show that would have been. Although, I would argue that he would not have won like that.
Well, that's what I asked. Liz asked me something about, like, how are they doing that? I was like, well, Paul and
it's
Eagle were on the same
they
card
were pushing each other.
Every
yeah,
round.
Yeah, yeah, they were pushing each other.
So they started
other.
The feature card on the same round. I was like, I think they just got
they
hot
it.
Off each other.
Yeah, they mm-hmm. knew right out the gates that they, one of them two was going to win after that first round, and they knew they had to stay with each other, and they were both playing yeah. out of their minds.
Going
and
into
Paul's
this year,
holding that disc like up like this when he's doing his run up. What the heck is that about? I'm going to do that.
Going into this year, Paul had not lost this event since 2013, which was five times in a row if you include the year it was a World Tour event in 2016. It wasn't a major in 2016, so four of them were majors, and then one World Tour event.
Yeah, bro, did you hear Eagle going, I dethroned
the
beast or
yeah.
whatever, like right in Paul's face. He's yeah. probably like 5 feet away. I was like, oof. He's not going
to
like that.
I'm not going to lie to you. This felt like it all weekend. This was feeling to me like a turning point in Paul's season. I was like, this is it. This yeah. is the win he needs.
Dude, I know. I
it's
so
got to be somewhat depressing to play at that
so
level
depressing.
All weekend mm-hmm. and lose to a guy with half his game missing.
That,
the bird versus the beast.
I think I mentioned this last week, but I was like, this is like the most deflating thing that could have happened to Paul was he played out of his mind and somebody had a perfect week.
Yeah.
Somebody had a perfect yeah. week and still beat him. And then it's like, so now he's thinking to himself, oh my gosh. Like,
even on my,
yeah,
even on a great weekend for me,
I
would have bullied the
lose.
Field previously.
Yeah.
I just lost.
And like he's already probably been feeling the effect of like the feel. It's so hard to win. It's so hard to win these days. And now it's like I finally had my week at my event, and I still couldn't win. Like yeah. it has to feel impossible to win to that guy right now.
Yeah, it's like,
and like I mean,
that's
and then you're gonna go to the next major, and then like Dickerson's well, like gonna
the
be
tough
back.
Part Rick, here. Yeah. Tough part here.
And he didn't
is,
have to deal with Rick either.
No, Rick. We'll talk about him later. Yeah, Rick might as well not have been there.
I don't know what he was doing.
Tough part here for Paul is like. If he wins this, he's going straight into D-Glow, an event he feels comfortable at.
Yeah, he's
easy
back.
Win.
Yeah,
he's back. You know, then you go from D-Glow to Ledgestone, easy win.
Yeah.
Like, this dude could have, if you
he
pull Paul
a great
out,
streak.
If Paul wins here and he like, gets his mojo back and he's like, oh, my putt's dialed, I'm feeling great.
His putt was
he could have
so
went
good.
win, and then he's worlds. He could have went worlds.
Could have.
Instead, he just lost. And now he's got this
back
long plane ride.
Zero.
4 days from now, we're starting D-Glow.
Man,
it's a tough scene now because now I have 4 days to sit and think about what just happened to me out there, and now I have to go into D-Glow. Good news is it's at Discraft's, like it's Discraft's event. He's gonna feel very homey there. He shot at 18 under. He could still win D-Glow. I'm not saying that. I just like him winning D-Glow a lot more if he wins European Open.
He just takes some very like heartbreaking major wins. You know, between this and Worlds last year, it's like, man, that's just rough. Like, I feel bad.
What's your prediction for Paul the rest of the season then?
I still think
he's going to be in contention at Worlds.
I still
there's
think
no
he's
going to
take
okay.
one of the last two majors. You know,
if he loses Worlds, he's not winning USDGC.
Well, I disagree. I mean, he did it last year.
not this year.
Okay. I mean,
last year he was having a solid season.
Well, here's what I'll say. Winning back-to-back at USDGC is no joke. So
that's more why I'm making
a
prediction.
That's a very safe bet. But I think he's going to take one of the two majors still because like
it wouldn't surprise me if he wins Worlds.
But
because again, Worlds is what Paul focuses on. Like, it's really what all disc golf focuses on.
He didn't really have a great time last time. I mean, I think Ricky wins Worlds this year.
That's the measure of success. If Paul wins Worlds, he's going to be like, that was still a pretty successful year. I became a six-time world champ.
It's like
this could be Eagle's first Worlds.
A lot of coulds. It's impossible.
The tough part
yeah,
is
it's impossible to
Paul
say.
Came
Kyle
in
Klein
51st at DDO. Right? We're going back to the same courses.
Yeah.
One of two things is going to happen. That's going to get in his head, and he's going to, for the first time in like over a decade, not be top two at Worlds, or he's going to come out and be pissed off. And
yeah, I think so many people had awful rounds at DDO. It'll be interesting to see who can like,
the wind should
quell
be down, which I think will help a lot.
Yeah.
But,
well, certainly.
Anyways, Eagle, though, reminded us that the hype about him is real. And even with an injury,
dude,
he's not going anywhere.
He is ridiculous, man. He's ridiculous.
All weekend, I was sitting there watching Eagle play, and I was like, I cannot believe what I'm watching right now. Like, you forget how good he is when he, because he hasn't been in the field for a while.
Yeah.
And even when he was in the field, he was injured at the beginning of the season.
He can outthrow everybody.
I mean, it is this guy, I think I'm confident to say Eagle is the most talented disc golfer to ever grace the face of the earth.
Yeah.
I won't say he's the best yet, because you got to win a lot more to be the best.
Yeah.
But I think he's by far the most talented player to ever play disc golf.
His ability to shot shape the disc was just put on full display with him not having his incredible tool that
That's
is
what I was gonna
his
say.
Forehand.
Does he shoot better out there with a forehand?
I think he would have done exactly the same.
Or would he have relied on it too much to where he...
Tough to say. It is tough to say. It's one of those, like, it makes the decision easier for you when you don't have the forehand. But I'd feel confident saying he would have done the same thing. However, I think him going into the weekend with low expectations for himself is what helped him get off to that hot start. And then he's the guy where you get him rolling. You know, he's gonna do well. The old Eagle, you got him rolling, and he could be stopped by his own head. Not anymore.
I was gonna say, the old Eagle crumbles that final round.
That's not Eagle. That hasn't been Eagle for a while, and like that's...
You go into 18, he has to birdie to win. Yeah, count him out.
Eagle has a much better killer instinct fighter kind of attitude to him, and he'll duel with anybody. And I mean, when he's throwing some of the shapes, he's throwing those aggressive rollers, crazy turners, lefties. I mean...
I think it probably helps too that he came into this tournament probably not expecting to win because of his injury.
That's what I just said.
Is it? Oh, okay. Sorry.
Sorry.
Well, I was listening. So I was just saying that, like, yeah, he didn't have that pressure on there. Instead, it felt more like a gift.
That's true. I mean, even, yeah, regardless of his own pressure, he also had a lack of outside pressure because people knew he was hurt.
Well, I mean, there was... I mean,
until
we were
round three.
Until round three, I'm saying to get started.
After round one, it's like, oh, wow, didn't expect that from Eagle. After round two, you're like, okay, Eagle's in this. Now all the pressure's back on. So he played two rounds under immense pressure.
Oh, absolutely.
And still won.
Yeah.
So, like...
He's insane. I mean, he didn't miss a C1X putt until, like, the last round, I'm pretty sure. It was...
No, 17, 18, round three.
His putt
round
is,
three it was. It was the end of round three.
His putt looks like it is coming out of a putting machine.
He's so good.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
He's so
him
good.
And Paul's putts were both on.
We won't see him again until Worlds, so he's going to take a few more weeks off in between. I think I imagine that he's just like, hey, I need my arm to keep rehabbing. I'm going to just play the majors.
Smart.
So I'd imagine
smart.
After Worlds, you probably won't see him doing the CGC.
Here's what I've learned is we've learned this from now, Chris Dickerson and him. Guess what? If they disc golfers that are super good take breaks, it doesn't matter. They're still really good. I think also for Eagle, like, I think him having that time off was probably just good. Like, sometimes it's good to get away a little bit and, like, get all the bad habits out of your game and just kind of rely on your talent. Especially, like, when he had no forehand, he had to just rely on his talent to be able to throw those backhand lines. And, I mean, he's good enough to do
that. Well, that's the thing is, Worlds, DDO, Eagle's performed well there before. I think it's a course that's set up well for him.
Oh, he absolutely could win Worlds.
In my opinion, I agree. I think him or Rick's the favorite to win Worlds this year.
Yeah.
I think it's one of them two, personally. It wouldn't surprise me if someone like Simon was able to do something crazy. But if I was a betting man, I think this is the first year I'm not betting on Paul, which probably means he's going to win. But I think this is the first year in the last, like, 7 years that I'm not.
I don't know.
I mean, if I had to put my money where my mouth was, none
of us bet on him to win this one, and we all got away with it. So... I think it's getting safer to not bet
on
Paul.
Well, what I'm saying is, like, at Worlds, though, Worlds is always a whole different story.
But European Open, he has not lost since
2013. I bet on him to win.
But it's a pretty similar story.
I still feel a lot, like, I feel stronger about Worlds.
Well, yeah, he feels stronger about
Worlds.
That's
what I'm saying.
But, yeah, so, I mean there's no doubt that
he's
going to show out.
You also, like, Major Paul still showed up at the European Open. He lost, but Major Paul still showed up.
Didn't show up at the Champions Cup.
He did not. He did not show up at
the Champions Cup. So that's where I kind of lost a little bit of hope. Although that is the fake major, so...
Yeah, it's the newest major. I would call it a fake major. You also now can no longer say Eagle doesn't have a real major win. You used to love that one.
I used to love that one.
You used to love saying Konopiste Day wasn't a real major, blah, blah, blah. Yeah,
but,
he slapped you around. He just won the European Open.
Well, the field wasn't at full strength.
I think European Open...
Let me know when
there is...
The only real majors are Worlds at USDGC, let's be honest.
Okay. I was about to say, watching the European Open, I might like it more than USDGC. I'm gonna say it.
Strongly disagree with that.
I'm gonna say it.
It's just not. It's clearly not as like.
If it happens every year, I will slowly like it more.
The reason why I like USDGC, it has to do with the course, is because even the best players of our time have a lot of trouble winning it repeatedly over and over again,
I just like the European Open because like
it's not a
European
Open. It's
ran like a professional event,
and USDGC isn't.
Minus the course, like we're on a college,
no,
we're
I
at
agree.
A college campus.
It's a weird. It always will be a weird disc golf thing, but somehow that weird course that they have made for USDGC produces the most random results ever. It is the most demanding event to win.
I think they'll be able to recreate it somewhere else, and I think they need to do that very soon.
I would agree, but I mean USDGC is still my favorite major.
I just like as we got closer and closer to the European Open, like the President's Cup started happening,
and they're still not
seeing clips of the course. I'm like
the other problem
dang,
I have with
I'm
the European
excited.
Open. Well, really, the only problem I have with European Open because I agree it is a phenomenal major is the fact that we still don't have a full field over there. So it's still
that's not the fault of the event though. It also
didn't say it
my
was.
Fault. My fault with
just
it
didn't say,
is
why I didn't like it as
every
much.
Other year. Like why are we doing this every other year?
Well, we don't know that they're. Hopefully, they don't continue.
They were talking
that.
About on the broadcast, and
they
Nate
said,
Doss said
he thinks they
he
are.
Goes. I think UC would have a. He said something like. Basically said there's no, I don't think UC would want to do it every year or something along those lines. So like,
I don't like only having three majors in a year.
I don't understand if European Open is going to happen every other year, not a major.
Yeah.
Like,
I would agree.
European Open.
Majors needs to happen
where
every year.
The sport is at a spot where the top players can get over there every year. They can.
Yeah.
Whether they choose not to, like Chris Dickerson or not, that's another story we'll talk about here in a second. They can get over there.
Yeah.
So let's have it every year.
Yeah,
what are we doing?
I understand it's tough to run, but then like get some more people behind it, like make it happen. Like,
well, but in 2016 they ran it back to back. They just ran it as a world tour event the next year.
It can be done. I mean, there's big events that happen every year, so like make it make it happen.
Another big storyline this weekend is Chandler Kramer.
Who is that guy?
He looked like he showed up. I sent the tweet out. and I still mean it. He looked like he showed up for a weekly, and like a random draw dubs weekly, and was like, oh shoot, his lead card at a major. Like he's throwing only forehands. He had an unconventional form. He was wearing rocking just, you know, athletic shorts and a dry fit t-shirt. Fits the dress code. I'm not going to complain about it, whatever. And here he is freaking tearing this course apart.
Yeah, I don't understand.
Forehand only. Like, he was throwing tumbleweed forehand rollers all over the place.
I don't even understand.
Good
how
for
he did
Lone
that.
Star, first yeah. off. Secondly, what did we just witness?
I don't know. It was very bizarre. It was like, I wasn't like really sure. I just like, oh yeah, that's Chandler Kramer still like chilling on the lead card. Like,
yeah,
he stayed
just
there.
Anywhere.
I don't.
It was impressive. His putt was very good. He only threw forehands.
Did he end up in solo third?
So fourth.
He got fourth. He got jumped. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Kevin Jones jumped.
Kevin Jones. Shout out Kevin Jones.
But
man.
So he was going into this event. He was 5 for 9 at cashing at Elite Series or Majors prior to the Europe trip. But most of the caches were pretty far down there. But then he goes 5th at Sula and then 5th at the European Open.
It's the blonde hair.
Back to back. 5th.
Chandler Kramer.
Remember the name, Chandler Kramer.
To be completely honest with you, I don't think we're ever going to see much of him.
No,
more.
Dude.
He has a talent to pop off at random events, but forehand only
watch
limits
out for,
you
listen to me right
a
now.
Lot more than backhand.
Watch out
only.
For Chandler Kramer at USDGC if he's there.
That's fair. That's a forehand event.
That's what I'm saying.
That's a forehand
watch
event.
Out for that because he'll throw it inbounds all over that
he
course.
He can pop off. He can pop off here and there, but he's going to have to develop a capable backhand to compete. You backhand only players. You can get by with it. You have more spin control, more angle control, more speed. You can do a lot more of the backhand. Forehand-only players, they can pop off at certain courses. You can't consistently be at the top with forehand-only.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen. So, super cool it happened. It was an amazing storyline, and he was throwing lines that I'm like, I mean, that's a backhand hyzer, and this dude just went forehand, Annie, flex, wild shot. He was throwing some incredible shots out there. So, props to him. I mean, he played out of his mind. Back-to-back events, it seems like, Sula and European Open. So
pretty crazy.
Very impressive Europe trip. He's coming home like, dang, I'm happy I made that trip. Because it also was a ballsy move to go to Europe.
Yeah,
if you've
seriously.
Only cashed at five Elite Series or Majors this year.
You never know, though. Maybe the guy's already loaded.
Maybe. But regardless, he's definitely, I mean, no doubt he can make a career out there. Like, his
forehand's what did fourth place
good
take
enough.
Home?
What?
Yeah, what was
fourth
top
place
cash?
Take home?
Oh, I have the cash list.
I'm actually curious.
European Open.
I feel like the purses like go under the radar a lot these days. I feel like nobody wants to talk
about
it.
It was a solid purse. It was a solid purse.
I figure European Open
would be a good one. So in MPO, the Eagle took home $12,000.
Oh, good.
Second took home $8,000. Third took home $6,000. Fourth, Chandler Kramer took home $4,500.
Nice.
Heck yeah.
Good
solid payout.
That's a good, yeah, that's a good
and
payout.
And then FPO went $8,000, $5,000, $3,200, $2,000. The total purse was $100,000.
Good. All right.
It was a solid payout.
That is respectable. $12,000 to take him a major, that is very respectable.
Yeah. Now, we have to talk about Ricky out there. He came in 12th place.
Yeah, dude, he's
which
stunk.
If you take a step back and you look at a major, you're like, oh, 12th place isn't that bad. It was a very weak field.
Yeah.
Very weak field compared to a normal major.
And the drop-off.
This is the biggest
third,
thing. He ended second, up 26 strokes off pace.
Yeah, that's
bizarre. That is crazy.
Ricky, in my opinion, Ricky was the only other guy in that field that could have kept that pace.
Yeah.
And he ended 26 strokes off of it.
It's so weird because like I wonder if his injury flared up at all.
I didn't hear anything about it.
That's why I didn't either. And I was like, it must be.
He hasn't posted about it or anything?
I think it was just an off weekend. I'm being honest with you. I think it was just an off weekend.
That's a really off weekend.
Supposed to do that.
I mean, he still shot like under par out there. Like I think what it is, it is a tough course. We said two guys making it look easy.
Yeah.
So, like, maybe you forget that it's a tough course.
And maybe once
there's a lot of OB, so if you're a little off,
yeah.
Like, I mean, even looking at Eagle, he had several breaks where, like, he kicked into the woods and stuff like that, and it was like, oh, wow. He has a wide open gap.
Right.
He kicks a little farther right, and he's not getting up and down.
And maybe
it could just be you're not getting
good
breaks.
Paul and Eagle got enough separation early that Ricky kind of got, like, zoned out a little bit.
Maybe.
Because that would be pretty easy to do.
Still very surprising, because I was going into this thinking, I mean, I picked Ricky in my top three. Mm-hmm. Ricky, to me, was a safe pick in my top three. I put Paul and James Conrad because I'm like, double points, major. I want a chance to like really pop off here.
Yeah.
I did. I gained more points on y'all. But I put Ricky as my safe pick because I'm like, surely Ricky's coming top three out here.
Yeah.
And then he came in 12th. And very disappointing to not see Chris Dickerson out there. Yeah, like, dude. He's arguably the best player in the world.
Chris Dickerson makes me mad.
You have to show up at majors.
I don't understand.
Like, I get he doesn't like flying, but Discraft just charter him a boat or something.
Yeah,
get the guy over there.
It makes me really
upset. He's got to be, like, it's a major.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I don't.
Because I would have loved to have seen Like, what if Chris Dickerson could have kept that pace? And what if Dickerson's up there with him?
Could have had a 3-horse.
Or what if it exposed Dickerson and he's down below Ricky?
I don't, yeah.
We won't know now because he didn't show up.
It's just a frustrating situation because, like, the guy is clearly committed to, like, he's going to make his living playing disc golf and do what he wants, and then that's going to be that. But, yeah. It's just a bummer. It is a bummer for the rest of the sport and for the people that enjoy watching you play when, like, you are depriving us of your greatness.
That's what I'm saying. Like, on our power ranking, he is number one in the world.
Yeah.
And I think he deserves that spot. I think he's the best player in the world as of right now. But, like, when you don't show up to a major, what am I supposed to do with that?
Yeah, it really
stinks. What am I supposed to do with that?
Really, it really stinks. When's his next event?
D-Glow.
He is going to D-Glow.
I believe.
And he'll probably win.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He'll probably win. He'll be like, he's back. Chris Dickerson's the best player in the world. And it's like, frick. Show up to a major, dude.
Come on, Chris. Well, he'll be the last two majors, at least.
He won Champions Cup.
We shouldn't have this talk again, right, for the rest of the year?
We shouldn't. I think he's back. Because
now we're going to the East Coast. Because
upcoming events, he's at D-Glow, Ledgestone, Des Moines, Worlds, and he's registered for Lake Marshall already. But he'll be at USAGC.
Okay. Like, so we're hopefully done with the Chris Dickerson mess, yeah. But like, oh my gosh, Chris Dickerson.
All right, let's get into some points here.
We gotta just teleport him around.
Trevor, who was in last place coming into the weekend, got 2 points for his MPO predictions, 8 points for his FPO predictions, which gave him 10 points and brings him up to 53 points.
Good job, Trevor. Come nice. On.
Connor got 2 points for his MPO prediction, 12 right. points for FPO.
Heck yeah. He
predicted first and second, right? Double points weekend. Big for Connor. 68 points is where Connor is at now. He extended his lead on Trevor.
Get wrecked.
And
that's an irrelevant lead.
I got 6 points for MPO, 8 points
that
for FPO, and 4 points for my dark horse pick. So I am now at a nice round number of 100.
It doesn't matter what we do.
I've reached 100 points.
We both have to pay an equal amount. So
it was that the rule?
Yeah, we have to split. We Dang split it. Buying Hunter Chick-fil-A.
Was that the rule? I feel like second I didn't have
like
to buy.
I feel like I shouldn't get punished for beating
Trevor. No, I'm pretty sure. We'll have to go back and look because I'm pretty sure second place didn't have to buy. So, you like, first place you got Chick-fil-A. Second place you don't get Chick-fil-A or you buy. And third place pays.
That would certainly make more sense.
I'm pretty sure that's what we did.
That's fair. Whatever. I mean, it's over.
No, it's not. Well, it's I
you won.
Y'all aren't going to catch me, but between y'all two, like,
no,
there's
yeah.
a lot of events left.
No,
there's still two majors on the table.
Between Connor and I, it's not over. But the problem is the predictions are so similar that, like, I would have to pick very perfectly for the last few events.
Bet him on Austin Hanum. That's what I did.
Yeah. He's not going to take a bet with me.
I saw y'all almost bet lunch.
We almost did. I was trying to get Trevor to do something.
I think
Paul
was top five.
Yeah, but then I was like, well, that's going to happen.
Yeah. All right, and... Probably
Paul,
one of the bigger.
I mean, I said that Paul was going to win. He didn't win, but he did a good job. I will say it. He's back.
He's not back.
He's not back.
He's not back.
I think we're on risk of if he doesn't win D-Glow, I mean, it's going to be a tough season for Paul.
I'm really not willing to admit
I feel
much.
Like the European Open was probably the loss that hurt more than him coming 51st at DDO.
Yeah, I'm not really going to...
You play that good and you lose.
I'm not going to call Paul washed up until...
I'll never call him washed
until,
up.
Well, if this whole rest of the season goes by and he doesn't win again, washed up.
All right. If you haven't seen it yet, a rules official called Nico on a time violation on the 18th hole in round two. Nico proceeded to get up in his face, ask him why multiple times before telling the official to step
ask
away.
Ask him why is like a nice way to put that, basically what he did.
Yeah, that was a nice way.
He basically yelled, why, like right in his face.
Before telling the official to step away, which the official did, and then Nico went after him and gets back in his face saying, you want to stare me down? And then the camera cuts, so we don't really know what happens beyond that. After the round, he was approached by the PDGA director of competition and refused to cooperate per the PDGA statement.
Yeah, bro. Like, that's even better that he didn't even cooperate afterwards.
The PDGA statement says, additionally, when approached by Jeff Jacquard, PDGA's director of competition, for further information on the incident, Mr. LoCastro refused to cooperate or even discuss the matter. And then competition manual 303.B8 states that obstruction of or failure or refusal to cooperate with any investigation by an official into a player conduct or the conduct of another player also constitutes as player misconduct, which led to Nico being disqualified from the tournament. Since then, Gateway has made the following statement. Gateway Disc Sports does not condone the actions or behaviors of our mixed bag sponsored player, Nico LoCastro, at the European Open yesterday. Effective immediately, Nico's contract with GDS, Gateway Disc Sports, will be suspended until a full investigation surrounding the incident can be conducted. We apologize for any damage his actions may have caused for the European Open, its organizers and sponsors, the PGA, the Pro Tour, and the sport of disc golf as a whole. Gateway Disc Sports is a small business that employs dozens of people and supports thousands of courses, clubs, players, and events. We ask the disc golf community not to hold our brand, distributors, supporters, or affiliates accountable for the actions of one individual player. Clash Discs is other sponsor.
I want to know what lawyer they got to write that statement, because it's very eloquent. And I'm just like, who wrote that?
That must have been a difficult conversation.
Yeah,
poor Dave.
Clash Discs also released a statement and said, Clash Discs would like to thank Nico Lacascio for apologizing for his actions that took place at the European Open. However, we do not condone these actions or behaviors, and because of this, we will not be continuing our professional relationships with Nico Lacascio. We wish Nico the best for his future. Nico
retribution,
then
baby.
Posted an apology on Facebook and Instagram. He also sent out some tweets. I'll read the tweets here.
Do you want me to read his Instagram post?
Post his... let me see.
The Instagram post was pretty basic.
Nico said, as you know...
Oh, it's Twitter. Never mind, I didn't see his Instagram
post. Nico said, as you know, I've made a mistake in my disc golf career. I'm taking temporary leave of absence. I'll be back with a new outlook. Positive change is necessary for me right now. I love the sport of disc golf and have made a commitment to work on my mental and physical health. And then he said another one that says, I love all of you who will support me through this process of self-reflection. It's okay to fall down sometimes, but it's never okay to stay there. There's an opportunity for me to do some inner work. Probably not his option to take some a leave of absence.
He's
going to
be
but
given a leave of absence.
It's like Ryan in The Office whenever he's like, I actually decided to do some community service. And then Jim's like, oh, you mean like court-ordered community service?
Yeah. So people were trying to defend him, saying like, look at other sports. People go after refs or official.
And they get fined.
Yeah, and say, they're overlooking suspended. a few basic things. First off, pace of those sports is typically a lot higher, which makes the outburst seem to fit a little bit
more. Well, but also, okay, two things. People were bringing up the baseball one. First of all, arguing with the ump in baseball it's like fighting in hockey, to where like it's such a part of the culture of baseball and the spectatorship of it that like it's not even like it's almost considered part of the sport. And guess what? You get ejected for it most of the time. Second of all, if you did that like in basketball, for an example, if you got up in a ref's face like that, you're getting fined. You're getting your tech. You're out of there. And you're also getting suspended probably. Yeah. Like there would be consequences.
Second, those outbursts are basically always accompanied by fines, technical fouls, ejections, etc. And there's been several cases of suspensions on top of that as well. So you can't really defend them by looking at other sports. I did see one that was crazy where a tennis person like went and beat the like ump's stand and almost hit him in his ankle. And apparently he wasn't suspended for that. My response to that is that was just a poor look on tennis. Like they should have suspended him for that.
Yeah, the other thing is like this is a different sport. So like let's not use other precedent.
And regardless, I think what we have to talk about here is A, disqualifying him from the event, easy, low-hanging fruit. Like that had to be done. Secondly, what do you expect the PDGA to do from here? Because depending on how the PDGA interprets this, this could lead to a suspension up to 24 months.
Yeah, well, the problem is, if you look at the PDGA rules, he like did literally textbook, because they have in words intimidation and stalking, like stalking the guy down, like not like stalking, like following.
Well, no, I think Class A offense, though, a lot of times is talking about like stalking.
Oh, okay. Well, in any case, intimidation.
Intimidation
is like
big one.
Written right there, and that is like basically what he was doing. And so if they look at their own guidelines, then he fits right in that Class A. The problem is, too, like Nico has always, you know, had some problematic things happen. He never really takes it out on other people. So it's kind of always like, whatever. But this is different. Like this guy, literally, it's so rich because everybody, the last time we talked about Nico taking too much time, everybody went, stop complaining. Just like grow a pair and call him on the time violations. Like you shouldn't be scared to call a guy on your card. A rules official does his job, calls him. What happens? He almost gets punched in the face. Like that is why people weren't calling him. And that's what I always said. Like, oh, there's probably a reason they're not calling him. It's because they're scared to. This is why. Because maybe this isn't the first time this has happened. Maybe he's done it before on non-televised cards or like...
Which props to the Disc Golf Network for cutting back to that moment.
Yeah,
because that wasn't on coverage. They were like, this happened moments ago. And then cut to it to show everyone what happened. So pretty baller move there.
Yeah, I just can't even... like it. Well,
personally, I expect somewhere between like a 6 to 12 month suspension.
I would guess right on a year is what I'm guessing.
Yeah. Going on, like coming into all of this, you know, throughout this year, I've felt bad for Nico because like he, within modern day disc golf era, he's earned this like bad boy rep,
yeah,
and stuff. And you can tell that like sometimes that really gets under his skin and hurts him, because he's like, I've done so much good for the sport, and like you're overlooking when he was like the best player in the world in like the 09 era, and like so much has been washed out. And so I was feeling bad for him, but then you go and do something like this and you just prove everyone right. And so, yeah, like, at some point, he's got to be held accountable. And to me, why I think a suspension is necessary is, like, if all they do is disqualify him from the event and he shows up, obviously, he said he's taking some time off, probably hoping if I take some time off, maybe they won't make me. But regardless, like, if he shows up to the next event, let's just say he rolled up D-Glo and he's like, I can play.
Yeah.
Who's calling this man? No one.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Yeah.
You just watched what happened. And, like,
yeah, mm-hmm,
what, if I'm on hole two and I see him blatantly foot fault, or in Nico's case, take a minute and a half,
yeah,
no chance I'm calling him. Because I'm like,
no,
dude, I'll play a 6-hour round. I ain't trying to get my teeth kicked in.
Yeah.
Like,
seriously.
Why am I calling this dude? So he's like, at that point, whether or not he's actually a danger to those around him, he feels like a danger to those around him.
Yeah.
So whether or not he actually would act beyond what he did, because, like, at the end of the day, he didn't punch anyone that we saw.
Yeah.
He didn't like do anything like physically. He just intimidated the crap out of someone and got up in their face like he was going to start a fight. Yeah. And if the official would have got back up in his face, who knows? A fight might have started.
What a childish thing to do. Like,
like, but
it's
like,
such a like small brain thing to do to just
now,
like,
at that point,
get up in somebody's face like that.
But now at this point,
especially when there's like no,
there's like no
have a reason
yeah,
to do
yeah,
it.
Like,
he's
oh my,
in the
like
wrong.
That's your first reaction is like, let me just get in your face and stare at you.
He's like, why?
Time violation. Why? PDGA rules. And he's like, step back from me.
Yeah, like
it's,
like,
got me
it's
there.
Like a school bully reaction to something.
Yeah,
like,
seriously.
Oh my gosh, grow up.
But yeah, so in my opinion, like, the PGA has to suspend him.
Yeah.
Because like, you can't let him back out on the course right now. And also, then like, if you don't suspend him, it brings in the question of like, why the heck did you suspend Bradley Williams so hard
right,
a few
yeah,
years ago?
Yeah.
And also, the next person who does it's like, well, hey, I can intimidate the frick out of my card mates because
yeah,
I'm not getting suspended.
I will say the Bradley Williams, I think that was really bad precedent. So I think we need to just,
I think they overreacted that.
Yeah, I think we need to, whenever, if Nico only gets a year, we don't need to all be like, well, then how come Bradley got 2 years? That was a bad suspension.
I think Bradley,
so
we need to
that go, but also understand that he at least needs to see some time.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. 6 months takes Nico
for
through
Bradley.
The rest of the year. Yeah.
Justice
free
for Bradley. Free Bradley.
Nico needs at least 6 months, in my opinion. That gets him through the end of the year, but he's back before the next tour year. If they come out with 6 months, I'd be like, okay, you know what? That makes sense. I also, if they come out with 12 months, I'm like, that's completely fair too. If they come out with 2 years, I can see why, because again, it's in their rule book. That could end the career of Nicola Castro.
Yeah, no, yeah. It's no doubt. Like, I mean, he is, you know, in his young 30s now, but like, he is one of those guys that's been clawing around and like still able to cash and like show up and like do okay on the tour, but the tour is getting better really fast. And if he has to take 2 years off, that could be it.
Well, like 2 years,
you might,
like,
not be able to make it back.
You'll lose your sponsors. He already lost. He's suspended by one, lost the other. If you're not playing for 2 years, I mean, what do people pay you for? Like, sponsor wise, nothing.
Yeah, that's another big
thing.
So,
like,
yeah, getting your sponsors.
You're not
going
to have any income.
Right.
So, like, 2 years of, like, you got to go find a way to make money, and then you're not going to be able to practice disc golf level you do. As I'm saying, if they went to the 2 month, this could legitimately be the end of Nicola Castro, like, as far as a player goes.
Yeah. It's, yeah, he's, I mean, he's one of those guys, too.
It's, like, that side makes me sad because, but at the same time, like, I, like, that side makes me want to feel bad for him.
I don't feel bad.
But on the flip side of the coin, I'm like, oh, just don't be an idiot.
Yeah, you
just,
had your warnings.
Just a very simple thing. Don't act like a toddler getting your toy taken away, and you won't be here. So I'm very curious to see what the PDGA does. I expect it to be between a 6 to 12-month suspension, but I think if the PDGA doesn't suspend him, I think that's a very bad move at the PDGA. If the PDGA is like, you know what? We disqualified him from a major. He's not suspended. Then that one, I'm like, that's
really
a very
bad
move by the PDGA, in my opinion. So I think he has to be suspended of some type. I'm very curious to
see
what it will. I expect a statement today or tomorrow.
I want to see a suspension come out and then like an appeal and like a hearing for a suspension. That's what I want
to
see.
I expect we'll hear today or tomorrow, because I'd imagine they didn't want to post prior to the winner, obviously. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to take any attention off the event, but they obviously need to post before the next event that he could play in.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I would expect a statement of some type to be made today or tomorrow. It might come out before this podcast comes out, but...
I was.
I just know that he's begging for like some forgiveness right now, but like, yeah. I hope that he should.
I mean, but the thing is, like, you were given a lot of time to change. Like, it's not like you weren't aware that you take too much time playing disc golf.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not
That's the thing I don't understand is, like, literally, like, an hour ago, you guys made a joke about me taking too long, like, playing disc golf, and I will never do it again. Just because I'm like, well, I'm obviously, if somebody else notices it, I'm not going to do that again. I can't imagine if it was actually, like, a rule called on me multiple times. Like,
if you watch,
I feel like
Nico,
you should be
able
to figure that out.
If you watch Nico play up close, he is so in his head. Like, I was literally, like, on his card once caddying for Brody. And, like, you watch him play, and he is so in his head that he's not even, he just, it does not even cross his mind how long he's been standing over his lie. Like, he just has to work on his mental game and mental just, like, capacity in general to, like, not overreact to things. Like, it's just some, I mean, it's sad because, like, you can tell, like, he just kind of snaps and, like, you know, that's a bummer. But, like, you've got to figure it out, or you can't put yourself in situations where you're going to get to that level of stress to where that's going to happen and you're going to hurt somebody.
Well, like, that's what you got to look at. The positive side of Bradley Williams' situation, right, was his suspension way too long back then? Absolutely. I think the PDGA has adjusted things since then, because I remember that there was I don't want to call it a strike, but, like, players were refusing to play until they heard more of an explanation back then when Bradley got suspended.
Right.
Because it was just kind of out of the blue for shoulder checking Matt Dollar, but it wasn't even really that much of a shoulder check. Long story. But the bright side of that is, if you look at Bradley Williams now, the dude is the most calm, composed, professional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he figured it out.
Yeah, and, like, he now looks like a joy to play with.
Yeah.
He looks like one of the, like, best guys to play with out there.
Yeah.
And he was able to come back and play at a higher level than he played at before.
Yeah.
Super smooth. Like, he's one of the smoothest throwers out there. And now it looks like everyone's just excited to play on a car with Bradley Williams.
Yeah.
When you go back to, like, pre-work on himself, Bradley, it was a very similar thing to Nico.
You know who else was kind of like it? Big Germ. You remember Big Germ back in the day used to, like, freak out on the course. Like, there are events where you can, like, find him, like, on cover, just way back in the day, like just, like, yelling and, like, being so mad. And, like, obviously now he's a delight.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like,
I'm not gonna lie, I don't see that happening for Nico though. I want to say that he's gonna figure his crap out, like, during this time. I don't think he. I think he might put on a show whenever he comes back, and he's gonna, for the first few rounds, he's going to be calm and collected, but I think that there are probably deeper rooted issues that,
well, the thing
that
is, like,
cause that kind
when
of
you
anger.
Come back, you're on probation. So, like,
yeah.
You come back,
well,
you're back, but, like, you can't just be on your best behavior for one event. Like, you got to, if something happens, gone.
Right.
Yeah. I just, there. I think that whenever you're showing that kind of stuff, there's other stuff. That you
but I
take
also
care of.
Feel like this has to be close to rock bottom as far as the disc golf thing goes for Nico.
Yeah.
And a lot of times that's what it takes to be like, hey,
yeah,
you know what? Maybe I should, like,
got,
I mean,
nowhere
he said
to go,
he's
going
to work on mental and physical health and stuff like that. Like,
yeah,
great.
Because,
like, Nico is, again, one of the more talented players we've ever seen. If you go back to, like, 2009 to 2012 era, and, like, what this dude, he was the first one to, like, instead of developing his forehand, he started throwing back, like, lefty backhand and stuff. I would love to see Nico, 6 month suspension, come back next year. 12 month suspension, come back. And he's actually worked on himself. He's cool, calm, and collected. And this era, their last memories of Nico LeCastro as he finishes and retires is all positive of him, how good he was at disc golf, how he could throw those crazy flex lines, you know, how good he is at putting, because he's a great putter when he's on too.
Mm-hmm.
All of that, and then how level-headed he was, because that's what everyone's memory is going to be of Bradley Williams.
That's very true.
So, like,
you're right.
You have a chance here. So, to me,
he's
that's
got all the
I would
one more chance, probably.
Yeah, but that's what I would love, is, like, he comes back.
I would love to see that. Yeah.
He's got everything taken care of, you know, all his ducks in a row, and the memory everyone has of Nico, because, like, this generation's memory of Nico isn't great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Generation before it, pretty good memory of Nico when he was an absolute baller. He has a chance to come back and, like, change everyone's perception. And, you know, I think that would be great. And I think it starts with a suspension from the PDGA. I think that's the first or the next step here. But let's do some power ranking updates. We've got some arguments to go over, I think, because I don't know what the heck to do with this list. I'm looking at it. I didn't change anything on it yet because I couldn't. I don't know what to do. That's where I'm at.
I would.
Prove me wrong. We have Chris Dickerson first in the world, Ricky Wysocki second, Simon Lazat third, Gannon Burr fourth, Matty O fifth, Calvin Heimberg sixth, Paul McBeth seventh, Joel Freeman eighth, James Conrad ninth, Kyle Klein 10th.
So I'll ask you questions and then you can give me rationale.
Okay, yep.
Why don't we bump Paul up?
We can, but here's the thing. You can jump Calvin Heimberg.
Yeah.
Matty O, Gannon Burr not there.
Yes.
So can he jump them?
Tough to say. I mean,
if he jumps them, then he needs to almost jump Simon and Ricky. But then do Simon and Ricky, because they neither of them played well. Ricky beat Simon. Do they fall below Gannon and Matteo?
Ricky ended up beating Simon.
Yeah.
Okay. I knew it got pretty close.
Do they fall below Gannon, Burr, and Matteo? Because then, again, then...
Why the heck was Gannon not there?
We didn't
either.
Go over Dark Horse picks.
Yeah, we did. I won.
Hunter won.
I don't know where I was.
Considerable amount.
Oh, I was looking at Ricky's Instagram, see if he described anything.
Gannon wasn't there either. Like, that bothers me so much.
I'm almost... If Gannon was
there...
He
was there, not. He was not
there. I
was
going to say, if Gannon was there, he probably shouldn't have been.
I just don't... Like, I don't like that. I want to see... Like, Gannon's another guy, like, at that course. Who knows how well he could have played there. Dang it.
Like, that's what I'm saying. So I don't know what to do
with
it.
That's what bothers me so much about... Like, when you... It's one thing when this happens at a pro tour. When it happens at a major, it's despicable. It's like, that stinks.
But now you see why I don't know what to do with it. Because, like,
I know
if you move Paul up, which I think we have to.
I think we bump.
Gannon was not there.
Here's what I think we do. I think we move Paul above Matteo. Because what we've seen from Paul is like, oh, yeah, he's still Paul. He's still better than Matteo. Let's move him up to there. Let's keep Gannon in his spot, though. Because
so here's the tough thing, too. It's Calvin Heimberg beat Ricky and Simon as well. He came in eighth.
Yeah, but he didn't do anything tremendous. Like, I'm more... I think we just have to, like... There are some that, like, I'm very moved to, like, we need to do something, and, like, Paul needs to move up.
Okay, so Gannon Burr. Now
then
we have
Paul
in fifth.
Yeah. Let's slide him there.
Which puts Matteo in six. Calvin Heimberg stay in seven?
Let's put Calvin ahead of Matteo as well.
But see, like, now we're just punishing Matteo for not going.
I don't really have a problem with that.
Okay.
I don't really have a problem with that. Like, it's one thing if you're injured.
Well, I bet Matteo played, we don't factor these in.
But, like, go to the major.
But, like, there was a lot of semi-big events that were happening over here. I bet they just played those. Like, what did he play this past weekend? Nothing.
Might not be in yet. What does it say?
Midsummer Meltdown.
What the heck is that?
I don't know. That's what he played this weekend. He won by one stroke over some
who?
Sullivan Tipton.
Never heard of him.
London?
That
is that you?
That doesn't count. Very funny.
Ezra Robinson was there. He beat the crap out of him.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Okay, not so Calvin Robinson. Heimberg jumps Matteo.
Yeah, let's do that. I feel comfortable doing that knowing that like both those players that just jumped Matteo could beat Matteo very easily next week.
Yeah.
But you know what? Matteo, I'm sure he'll end up just sneaking his way right back into fifth place where he likes to be.
All right, and then Ricky Simon...
They just keep them where they are.
We keep them second, third.
It's a pretty gross week for the power rankings.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know what to do with this crap.
Yeah, I think we just shift it like that.
Because Kyle Klein wasn't there. James Conrad sucked too, didn't he?
No, he didn't suck. I mean, he fell off, but like, I don't want to say he did that bad.
What place would you guess he came in?
I mean, he's probably top 20, right?
I don't know. I haven't looked.
No, he
20th.
Did lose to
20th.
Yeah, I say he lost to Brody.
Yeah.
Okay, top 20 though.
That is true. Came 20th. I'm surprised that was Kyle Klein not out there. How is a third crush boy not the Discmania event?
I don't understand. I don't understand what was keeping people out of Europe.
I think we remove everyone that wasn't in Europe off the power rankings as a punishment.
It makes me mad.
And
it's
we just
a punishment.
Yeah. And the people who were there.
And like I know people are gonna.
And where are they find
comments
out about
like,
that?
Well, some people can't afford to go to Europe,
note,
but a lot of them get their flights paid for.
Kyle Klein could have been in Europe.
Like
100%.
Yeah, Discmania
sure.
would have loved him
Burr,
there.
I mean, Prodigy.
Canberra's made
had
like 30 grand
him.
This year, man. Like buy a ticket.
buy here's ticket. The thing, right? You might be saying Eagle McMahon belongs in the top 10. Here's what Trevor and I were at, right? Eagle, let's just look at where Eagle's done this season or hasn't done.
Dang, dude. It's rough.
Well, he's been injured all season.
Yeah, he's hurt. He's hurt.
Because, like, to me, Eagle's injured beginning of the season, right? So he doesn't have a good start to the season. He goes 21st Las Vegas, 14th Champions Cup, DNFs Jonesboro. That's his season so far.
How did Eagle just win this tournament?
Right?
Yeah, it was pretty
random. Gone. Then he recovers. He comes back. The Eagle I saw out there
the problem with Eagle
this weekend
also,
was the best player in the world.
It's going to be problematic because like if he's not going to play again to
Worlds.
He's
not going to play again to Worlds. So if we throw him in here.
Let's worry about it when we get to Worlds.
Let's worry about him after Worlds.
Yeah.
Because to me, if we put him on the list, he's the number one player in the world.
Yeah, I
mean, and then like, how are you going to put the number one player in the world, and you're not going to see him for a month?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'm looking at you, Chris.
It's just gonna mess up our power rankings even more. So let's just keep him off.
Because then also like, how can you make him jump Chris when he didn't beat Chris?
Honorable mention spot, Eagle McMahon.
I'll put Chris Dickerson in, like, you know how you have a ghost card?
We should just keep inventing spots on our, like, now that we have, like, all these random.
Honorable mention, most improved.
Well, Eagles. Yeah.
Paul McBeth
Eagles
is most
ghost,
improved.
Eagles on the ghost, player of ghost the one card.
Okay,
Eagle so, McMahon like, you know how you have one. A ghost card in disc golf sometimes? Eagles in the ghost one spot.
Ghost one spot.
Of, like, the
Eagle.
Spot's his if he comes back and
if you're that guy who updates that website for us, make good sure luck. You have Eagle in the ghost one spot.
Yeah, good luck. Yeah, because so, if Eagle comes back and claims it at Worlds, it's his.
It's his. He can have it, but not net yet. We won't give it to
but
him.
But we won't give it to him. It's on reserve.
We won't do it.
If it's on reserve, you have to come and take it, okay? Chris Dickerson is tentatively holding it for you.
You guys
FPO,
are just too funny.
Similar situation going on here.
Situation.
Because we have Kat and Paige played. Chris and Tatar, elbow injury. Valerie Mandahano, not over there. Missy Gannon, not over there.
I say we flip-flop Paige and Kat.
And that's it?
I think we just keep doing that every week until one of them does something out of the normal, which right now is just flip-flop.
Okay, that's fine with me. So we put Paige first, Kat third.
I feel like that makes
people
sense.
Don't be going to Europe, man, and they need to.
Yeah, I don't understand why.
I don't either.
What are you guys talking about Europe? Your word choice is very funny.
It's just so frustrating that they have a major and the field is so weak.
Well, I think it's just like it costs a lot to get over there, obviously. And it's like, if I get over there and I don't place in the top like 10, I'm probably not making my money back.
Here's what they need to do next year is the European Open just needs to pay for a giant plane to take them all
no,
over.
No, I think the European Open needs to just be in the U.S. next year.
That's so funny.
It can be in New England.
Yeah.
The new
this
European
is the first
Open.
Spot they got to across the sea.
Yeah.
Just like
yeah,
a
I think
plane
that's
Plymouth
what they
like have it
happen.
In Boston.
But, yeah. All right. It's time for the fan favorite segment, right. Trevor's trivia. Well, I had a bunch of jokes, but I just left them.
Nice. That's smart. That's smart.
So, yeah, my trivia question was related to what we were talking about earlier. Because I was, you know, what happened was Paul and Eagle get in this duel, and everybody's like, oh, this is just vintage. You know, like Paul versus somebody.
Uh-huh.
Like, yeah. They're like a million strokes away from everybody else. I was like, is it that vintage? Like, has this ever happened in the capacity just that it just happened? So I looked back over Paul's whole career. And this is national tours, pro tours, so even when they were A tiers, or majors. So, like, anything like in those
tiers.
So, no
silver series.
So, no silver series, no just normal A tiers
yeah.
either. This has never happened. Not even close. My question is.
This hasn't happened.
Yeah, so in this event in particular, the margin was 16 strokes
yeah.
from second place. On so I looked and found every scenario where Paul was in the top two and third place was far back in his whole career. I want you to guess how many instances was there a larger than 8-stroke margin between
Ooh.
Second and third, larger than 8-stroke. How many occurrences? And then I'll give you extra points if you can guess any further details.
I'm gonna say 5.
It's only happened once.
Okay.
Well. Wow.
Now I'll see if you can. Now this is more of the question is see if you can guess what year and also what event.
What year and event?
And even more bonus points if you can guess like who he was.
That's crazy. It feels like it's been more than one.
And this is from second to third.
I will give you a hint.
Or this is like
this is from second to third, and he was in the top two. I will give you two hints to help you out because this is
okay.
an impossible question. He was not dueling Ricky,
okay.
and he did not win this event.
Oh.
He was in
interesting.
Second.
2018 Worlds?
No.
Yeah, like what?
It was 2015 Ledgestone.
Yeah, not a chance. That's the most random. That's
the most
random
other,
I've ever heard.
The other
Who
one
won
that?
Sexton?
Lazat.
Oh, so your Simon
one. Yeah, the other one that was, there was another one that was, I think there was two others that were 8-strokes, but it was, I just thought it was interesting because like I expected to go back and find like other instances or similar. Nothing like that has ever happened.
Yeah.
So like people need to realize, I think people were like, people were definitely like, oh my gosh, this is crazy how much they pulled away. But everybody was kind of like, oh yeah, this is just like it used to happen. No, that's never happened before.
Yeah.
Like that was very unprecedented, just how many strokes they pulled away from. And people need to realize how ridiculous that was.
It was ridiculous.
Like
that
they almost crazy. They almost doubled the previous like Paul
Has
record.
Paul ever won by 8 before? Surely.
Oh, by 8 strokes in total? Yeah, I believe he
yeah.
has. Yeah.
That's yeah, that's
bizarre.
Wild, wild stuff. I mean, when you're watching it, you got the feeling like, this has never happened before.
It was insane. I mean, that separation was ridiculous.
I mean, it was just two guys that are two of the most talented disc golfers to ever, probably the two most talented disc golfers to ever be on the face of the planet. And they both played at their highest level.
Yeah.
For four rounds.
For four rounds.
And so
cool.
that's the difference. It's like, people just aren't capable of that. It was incredible. This next topic went under the radar a little bit, but I wasn't going to let it slide.
Yeah, no, this is a big topic.
I saw it on, shout out to Dixon Jowers. Saw it on his Facebook shout group out. On the box with Dixon Jowers. This man catches stuff that I never see. But from what I understand, what happened is it was at PDGA Masters Worlds. Owen was pulling into the final round and allegedly flipped off a volunteer.
I mean, showed him the bird. Go ahead and picture that in your head for a second.
And then was given a courtesy warning. In some places it said that she received a violation, meaning she took a stroke, on the hole one of the final nine. So this is from the post from Dixon Jowers in his Facebook group. And so I'm going to just read majority of his post because it gives a lot of context and he brings up some good points as to like, why does this matter? Because you might be listening to that and be like, oh, am I supposed to hate Owen? No, that's not any of this. Point. First off, she claims she didn't do it. So that's a whole set. That's a very important part.
That is an important part.
Secondly, this is a much bigger story to context with the PDGA. But so this is from Dixon Jowers' post in his Facebook group, again, on the box with Dixon Jowers, the name of that Facebook group. So this is what he says. Here's what I've been able to verify with either the TD, which is Nate Heinold, PDGA, Owen, or a player on the card. A courtesy warning was given after the first hole had been played during the final nine. This was resulting from something that happened in the parking lot between Owen and a parking lot staffer approximately 45 minutes before the tee time. Owen says unequivocally that she never gave the finger to anyone, and that story is a lie. The warning was given in accordance with Competition Manual 3.03. The PDGA defines quote-unquote on-premises as participating in a PDGA event. That's big. Both the TD and the PDGA say they will not give any farther information on the warning. Here's where the speculation begins. If the staffer says Owen did it, and Owen, and presumably her husband, since he was in the same vehicle, says she didn't do it, how can she be punished for it? Since the gesture is in dispute, that leaves two possible stories. As far as I can tell, the staffer story was held to be more valuable than Owen's, or the warning was given for something else. That sounds like a this sounds like a giant misunderstanding that somehow escalated to what happened on hole one. Not sure why it had to go that far, especially when considering the magnitude of the situation with the leader on the final nine seeking a world championship. Luckily, Owen was able to win that world championship. That was me, not Dixon. All right, back to Dixon. The specific reason for this particular warning are almost irrelevant for the larger discussion. I've asked the PDGA if, to their knowledge, a warning in a round has ever been given for activity prior to the round, and I'll update if slash when I receive the answer. This, to me, is the story. For folks who have been saying, you weren't there, so it doesn't concern you, I'm shocked at your lack of foresight. Here's a list of things I've personally witnessed on premises that are now within the scope of this possibly new reading of the rule. Drinking, smoking, illegal drug use, loud cursing, lots of middle fingers, pushing, shoving. He continues to list down. But
oh, yeah.
The old line from 2 minutes till the last putt has been erased. I don't know quite where the new one has been or will be drawn. This is what concerns me, not Owen's finger.
Yeah, there's a ton of implications for this. Number one issue is that Owen's word was basically null and void over a staffer, which means if with all this precedent, you know, concerned, that now means that I can go and run up to Paul McBeth on the first tee and I can have him given a courtesy warning just based on my word.
Well, that's what
I could lie straight to their face and say, Paul McBeth, punch me in the face. Look at this bruise. He punched me in the face and then he can get a courtesy warning or worse, because now your word against the pros, apparently just with no witness, is just like bond. Like, that's it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like, imagine this in Europe. If someone walks up, a volunteer walks up and says, hey, Eagle flipped me off, walking up for the first tee of the final round in Europe. And then Eagle receives a warning when he never even saw that volunteer.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying that's what happened in the
No,
own
it might
situation,
not have, but it could now.
But, like, that's the precedent.
That's the precedent.
Because what probably happened is Owen probably, like, threw her hands up or something like this, and the staffer of, it was like a St. Jude volunteer, was like, oh my gosh, she just gave me the finger.
Mm-hmm.
And then ran and told someone, they're like, that's unacceptable, we got to act now.
Yeah.
And they act, give her a courtesy warning, whether they were allowed to or not, and then the PDGA kind of backs into the corner, defending their actions, which now opens up a huge can of worms.
Classic PDGA. So, yeah, the second issue was that she was given a courtesy warning for something that happened when she was pulling into the parking lot.
Yeah, 45 minutes prior to the start of the round.
And the PDGA, in their classic, we will never, ever admit we're wrong, you know, form, they just decide that it, like, it conforms with their rules, and it always has. What are you talking about? But, like Dixon mentioned, that now means that anything done in, like, on the property of a disc golf event, on the day of the event or whatever, is now involved in the rules. And like he mentioned, if you've ever been to some like lower down disc golf events, there's some pretty wild dark horse things that are going on in the parking lot. So you could just be throwing out. I might as well just bring a stack of courtesy violations, just be handing them out to people like as I see them.
Well, not to mention like one of the most obvious things. I mean, there's practice putting that goes on.
Well, that wouldn't be a courtesy violation, though.
Well, yeah, it wouldn't be. But practice throw is illegal during the round, and if you're around, technically.
But this is just for a courtesy.
No,
so
this is like courtesy
For courtesy violations.
Yeah, yeah, but like
it's not a football because you threw. That's what. Well, that's the driving range.
Yeah.
No, so if you read the rule though, several are defined in the rule book as 2 minutes until the final putt. Like that is a line in the rule book.
Yeah.
But several also are not, and so I'm not guessing. This is saying this situation is saying that. The ones that aren't defined by 2 minutes no final putt apply to the entire time you're on the premise. Now, I could get the pro tour having this standard for their pros.
Right.
Of saying, hey, when you're here, the whole time you're here, you're representing the pro tour, you rep blah, blah, blah. This is a pro tour standard for pros. Issue here, and I get that this was a PDGA pro major, but it has implications across all PDGA events, like you're saying. So, like, this isn't like we had to hold pros to a certain standard and, like, blah, blah, blah. This is, like, okay, now this has implications all the way down to a C tier.
And here's the other thing is, don't get me wrong. I have no problem with standards being enforced from the time you're on the premises. That's really not an issue to me because you shouldn't need to make courtesy violations ever. Like it shouldn't be a problem. The bigger problem with this story is probably really that the staffer's word was taken over Owens, just like without witness, just like, okay, that must have been what happened. And I think it is a little bit odd that she's being given this like warning on the first tee.
Like, no, it's in the middle of the first hole.
Or in the middle of the
first
hole.
Apparently, like, they ran down and got to her.
Like, that to me is weird. Like, it's like, if you're not going to say something to her before the round, like, hey, let's just, like, I want to give you a warning, then, like, she's already started playing. Like, that's kind of messed up. And she might not have even done anything.
But I think
if
I understand,
I wouldn't feel so bad if it's like she might not have done anything.
If I understand the scope of the story, it sounds like by when it was given to her round already starting.
Yeah.
What sounds like to me is a volunteer came up, told the TD. The TD of the whole event was Nate Heinold. It's not clear if he's the TD that was told this, like if he was the course TD.
Yeah.
But what sounds like to me is like Owen shows up, allegedly, according to her, doesn't flip the bird at someone, right? Warms up, practice putts, whatever, goes on, doesn't hear about it, starts her round, goes to where her story never even gets to be heard before the warning's given.
So, I mean, that would fluster me beyond.
Luckily,
compare.
She had a big enough lead that like she was still able to win by
like
eight
if somebody
strokes,
came up to me and warned me and I hadn't done it, especially, I would be like,
Even get a chance to
say. It would be, I would be distraught. Like for the rest of that round, it'd be in my head. Like, oh my gosh,
to
like,
me
what
though,
did I do?
Like this has implications because like I've been at events, one in particular, this situation. I won't put the player's name in here because there's no reason to, but I was watching a card. This player was having a particularly bad round. They kept themselves as composed as they could during the round. Sure, there were some outbursts here and there, and they weren't a pleasure to be around, but considering how bad their round was going, I got it. It was fine. This is at a Pro Tour event. After the round, they walk to their car, pull out a golf club, and just start like hacking the ground, right? To let their anger and frustration out. Per this, that could be a courtesy warning, because you can't do that during a round.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But now you're on premise. So then, you could start the next round with a courtesy warning where it's like, hey, I got to tiptoe this round because if not, boom, stroke. For something that's like, it happened in the parking lot and, like, I would have let my anger out. But, like, he didn't go towards anyone. No one was in danger around him. None of that. He just got his anger out in, and was it the good look? Probably not.
Right.
But it was a respectful way to do it because, like, I'd rather you take it out on that than me. You know what I'm saying? Like, it is what it is. I was a spectator just watching, but you know what I'm saying? Now this implication means he's still on premise. He's still participating in the event.
Well,
right now.
I mean, rule, and it's a weird one too, because like rules enforcement in general, just like in golf, it's kind of got that gentleman's game type thing to it where it's like you just kind of expected to respect the rules in a lot of sense. And like, because like there can't be officials eagle eye watching the parking lot to see if people do things wrong. You're just kind of expected to carry yourself in a certain way when you're playing on the Disc Golf Pro Tour.
But up to this point, you haven't, like, the parking lot and stuff like that, you haven't been.
Right. No, but I'm just saying,
that's what's weird,
like,
to me is, like, there wasn't a previous example I've seen.
But going forward, like, that really just should be the standard of the sport in general. But I think
there needs to be a statement or something, though, by the Pro Tour saying, like, hey, just so you guys know as players, when you're in the parking lot, you're still adhering to these standards.
Right. But I
like,
mean,
how can the player follow something they don't know they're supposed to follow?
Well,
because you also have to think,
not flipping off a parking attendant is,
well,
like,
she didn't.
Which I'm just saying, but like, if that's the standard, then like, that's pretty easy for people to just not do. But yeah, I agree.
But the
there
standard
are weird,
also includes cursing, drinking.
Yeah,
and stuff
there
like
are
that.
There are ones that are definitely
and
looser
a lot of
that
this is
disc
like,
golfers would not.
People
follow
are parking
normally.
Their vans they live in.
Yeah.
In these parking lots.
Yeah.
So are they
that's
always on
weird
premises?
Line. Yeah. That's
like, are they always participating in the event?
Yeah. That is the weird line. Is like, it's not even like these disc golfers. A lot of them aren't just like parking in, leaving, you know, it's not like they're in the parking lot for 5 minutes. Like they park their vans, like you said, and they like living in there. So like, that is where it gets even more interesting. Cause it's like these
like,
disc
hey,
golfers after the round, that's where they're going to live.
Yeah. You better be sober.
Yeah.
No drinking at all. Period. Yeah. I know you live in that van, but you're on premise. You're still participating in an event. Hey, is that a cigarette you're lighting up? Mm-mm. You're still on premise, baby.
It's a very,
like, that's where, like, to me, I'm like,
the PDGA just,
I just don't, I think they reacted to the situation and were like, oh no, it makes sense. She should be punished for this action that
they
she
just
probably didn't
do.
She should be punished for this. And then it brought up this question. They're like, oh shoot.
They never think about the,
okay, well, now we're back to the corner. Well, she's on premise. She's participating. It's like, okay, but now what, look at the can of worms you just opened.
Yeah.
And now what?
They do that a lot where it's like, you don't
realize.
That's
the problem is that like, if you look at just this specific like situation,
it's not that big of a deal.
It's not that crazy, but you just think about how much can happen in the future because of it. And also again, the huge deal, which is that she says she didn't do it. And the parking attendant says that she did do it, which like,
as I'm saying, to me, I don't think her story was heard before she got the warning.
Yeah, that's
because like it happened while she's on
the
first hole.
Part
that's
of that
crazy.
So, like, it's
how
not like
can
the,
you
the,
get...
unless there's a part that wasn't told. It's not like the TD walked up and it's like, hey, this is what you're being accused of. Like, what's your story? Because if you're gonna do that, why would you do it on the first hole?
I also
hole?
Don't know this, but I doubt that Owen has a reputation for like stuff like that.
No,
so,
Owen
like,
seems like a very chill, calm, kind person.
Yeah. So like, it's, you know, that's just the weirdest thing.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
All right, well, that's the episode. That's Grip Lock. I don't know how long it was. I think it was over an hour and a half.
It
is what it is.
It was over an hour.
It was a good episode. D-Glow's happening this weekend. We'll have a preview show for that midweek. You're not going to miss that. And, thank you all so much for tuning in. Talk to you Wednesday or Thursday, whenever the day before D-Glow starts. You'll see it in your feed. It's fine.